Hey, welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio. And also, we're on Amazon now. And we're on Spotify, Stitcher. We're on every podcast network. iHeartRadio, Podchaser, Podcast Addict. Wherever you're listening to us. We're on YouTube as well, wherever you're watching us. It's a Dark Mark show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And she's actually on camera. I didn't expect it this week, but she looks great. It's my co-host. Everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ, Hannah Bach.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Hi. I'm pretty good. How are you?
We're good. We're taping this Thanksgiving week. And, you know, Thanksgiving, I never know what to do. And last year, our studio, we didn't have a studio, so we didn't do a Thanksgiving show. And I was thinking about people I'm grateful to have met and people to have in my life. And one of the people that I am grateful to have met was our guest, Coraline Jewell, the figure skater turned porn star turned swingers mogul. And she was on another podcast of somebody I haven't seen in probably, 8 years, 10 years, maybe. But he's a very funny comedian. And not only that, apparently he's a life coach as well. And he has his own podcast, which is called Before You Kill Yourself. My friend then, and I think my friend now, Leo Flowers.
Yeah, what's going on, brother? Friends forever, man. You know, I was just talking to a few buddies of mine about a book I just read on Genghis Khan. And in his book, he's known for, wiping out millions of people.
Yes.
But he also had a thing he called an Anda. And an Anda was basically a brother for life. It was just someone who wasn't a blood brother, but he considered anybody that he went to war with or anybody who sacrificed for him his Anda. And he revered his Andas more than his blood brothers, because blood brothers, they're just your brother because they're born into it. But
right.
Anda, like, that's they have to earn that. They have to work for that. They have to,
you had to get killed by Genghis Khan.
Yeah, you had to get killed by Genghis Khan,
Right.
So,
well, Hannah knows about you. You don't choose your family, but you choose your friends.
Yeah,
definitely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's where we're at. But I was, I hadn't seen Leo in a long time, and I was happy to see. I know I had seen him. He had been featured on Byron Allen's show, on Carson Daly's show. I had seen that you had made Comedy Cellar show, a lot of Kevin Nealon show at the Laugh Factory, a lot of great stuff. I did see that, and then I just sort of, I honestly hate to say it, I haven't thought about Leo Flowers in a long time, and then I saw you got a podcast, and I said we got to talk to Leo and catch up.
Yeah, man, it's been a while. We're at over 200 episodes. I started I think December of 2018, 2019.
So, okay.
It's like Groundhog's Day living here in LA. Like, I can't.
Well, lately, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But even before, because it's the same weather every day, and you almost have to create your own seasons
right out
here, So.
Well, there's pilot season. There's, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, pilot, yeah. Football season, all these things, whatever. So, yeah, for about 2 years, we've been doing a podcast, and we're doing well, man. I'm very proud of it.
Right. And before we get started, since you have a podcast, you know how this goes. Real quick, our sponsors. We are sponsored by Audible. So if you go to audibletrial.com/DMS, audibletrial.com/DMS, great deal now. You get a free book and access to every Audible original that they've ever done, including the Sandman comic book adaptation, the Alien 3 adaptation from William Gibson's unfinished script, Bob Newhart's show, Kate McKinnon has a thing, but also any book you want. So if you want something by Sylvia Plath, you want something from Virginia Woolf, you want something from Anthony Bourdain, something about Kurt Cobain, something about Chris Cornell, or somebody who hasn't killed themselves, you just go to Audible, audibletrial.com/DMS. Nobody's laughing at my suicide joke. Okay,
I was
so
laughing.
Before you kill, if only they heard Before You Killed Yourself, Virginia Woolf and all of them, and Anthony Bourdain, they'd still be alive. So, but anyway, I'm jesting, but it's a great deal. Costs you nothing. You can cancel next day. You keep the book. You keep the Audible originals. audibletrial.com/DMS. It's LA. Unfortunately, I hear that all the restaurants and as of tomorrow, you can only get takeout. You can't sit even outside. Mm-hmm. So support your local restaurants. And what I'm probably going to do, since I'm actually alone for Thanksgiving because of the COVID, my parents said, you know, it's better be safe than sorry. I probably, because I've done this before, I'm going to go to our favorite restaurant, Doomy's Home Cooking.
You're going to have their Thanksgiving plate. Yeah.
Have you had the Doomy's Thanksgiving dinner, Hannah?
No, I really want one, but it's such a drive right now.
I have had it. It's delicious. And now when I did it, I picked up a pumpkin pie and a pecan pie for my parents. Now this is, this is a vegan restaurant. Doomy's Home Cooking, D-O-O-M-I-E-S, 1253 Vine Street. Not only do they have Thanksgiving dinner, which is delicious because I've had it, but they also have stuff. Now I know you're in shape and you diet very, very meticulously. So this is a cheat day. But if you want to have a cheat day, go to Doomy's Home Cooking. Last time I was there, I had the vegan chicken cordon bleu sandwich. Delicious. They've got flautas, burritos. The nachos were named one of the 10 best nachos in LA. The only one without meat.
And they're having their own take on the Popeye's chicken sandwich right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, the chicken cordon bleu sandwich that they have is better than Popeye's. Mm-hmm. Bigger and better.
Well, they have a spicy one now, a big one. I saw it on their story.
Yeah, no, I saw that too. Next time I'll have to check that out. But no, the chicken breast they put on the sandwich is so big. It's bigger than Popeye's. It's amazing. It's not real chicken. It's vegan. The guy's a genius. I don't know how he does it. But support your local restaurant. Doomy's Home Cooking, wherever you would like.
Especially right now.
It's important. Keep them in business. And just real quick, Hustler Hollywood. We will have a link on this podcast if you're listening to us on the podcast catcher or YouTube for 20% off whatever you want, lingerie, pills, implements, whatever you want. And you get 20% off and a naughty gift. It's great to give your girlfriend or your wife something sexy. Leo?
I'm not a lingerie guy.
It's for her. It's not for you.
She's butt ass naked. You know, I'm not.
I'm with you.
I don't need the extras. I don't need candles. And it's like, if I need all that, something's wrong. Something's off.
See, I'm with you. And this is what a lot of women don't understand is there's a lot of guys that just like, because they're like, well, what do you think is hot, like, on a woman? I'm like, nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. But
actually, like, you know, when women are more covered up, like when I go skiing and you see women and in their little ski outfits and Parkers. The hat bundled. Oh my God, it's just something sexy. I don't know what it is.
Hey, you know, it's funny you should say that because every now and then I'll see like a Muslim woman with the whole thing. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
And this is all you can see.
Yeah.
But when you look in there, you're like, oh, she's hot.
You know. Yeah.
You ever see that, Hannah? You ever see a woman like
all covered? Oh, they have the most beautiful eyes. Yeah.
You could just tell. Yeah. You could just tell.
Yeah, definitely. And,
but anyway, 20% off. There's all sorts of things that you can get. Maybe not Leo, but other people that want to treat their woman to have them dress up. Women like to dress up. They like to dress up in lingerie, but whatever you want. Mm-hmm. They've got all sorts of sexy gifts at Hustler Hollywood. Also, Spy Associates. 20% off any order over $250. If you want to spy on somebody, you want to see somebody spying on you, this is James Bond stuff. You'll love it. And one more. We got so many sponsors. I'm sorry about this, Leo. Raise Energy Drinks. Raise Energy. This is great bubble gum, and it's terrific. This is stuff you don't get at 7-Eleven. You get this at gyms. You get this at GNC. It's got electrolytes. And once again, Leo's scoffing at it because he lives a very healthy lifestyle. But I don't, and I need to wake up. So this is good for me. Zero sugar, zero carbs, zero crash, and it's the best tasting. And I'm going to pop open one right now because, as you'll see, Leo is a ball of fire, so I got to keep up with him.
Yeah.
Delicious. Anyway, so that's that.
That's sponsor money. I love it.
So we got all the commerce out of the way. So Leo, Hannah, if you don't know Leo, which you don't, you just met him. I think you're getting a good vibe. Although, from the pictures I sent you, how about that smile, huh?
Beautiful smile. Beautiful bone structure. Yes.
Yes. But which I didn't, I think we talked about it once or twice, but I don't recall the details, but you grew up in Chicago. Is that correct?
That's true. North Side. 18 years, single parent home. I have a younger sister, 4 years younger. Went to a Catholic school as a kid.
Ooh.
You know, I was that kid that I was accepted everywhere, but never felt like I was a part of anything.
Mm.
Because I went to a Catholic school. It was white. I'm not white. I'm not Catholic. But I felt accepted, you know, like there wasn't any beef or anything or any right. tension there.
Why did your mom send you to Catholic school?
Say it again.
Why did your mom send you to Catholic school?
Because the public schools weren't giving me enough homework. You know, my mom was very big on education and work. And I remember one day I came home from school. I had homework, but I told her I didn't have homework. And she was like, I'm not sending you anywhere that's not giving you homework every day. And she yanked me out of that public school. Had I known, I would have shown her the homework. I didn't realize this is going to be the consequence for not having homework. And she threw me in a Catholic school. So, you know, she had to work harder. And but it was a lesson early on. So at fourth grade, I got pulled out of a public and thrown in a Catholic school. And it really reaffirmed and validated the importance of education, because my mom could not afford it, but she you know, she put in the extra hours and did what she could. So
that's hilarious. You don't have any homework, so we're going to send you a place where nuns will strap you on the knuckles and make sure you have homework.
I was fortunate. I didn't, you know, I didn't have any Father Michael issues, and I didn't have any Sister Teresa beatings. It was a very progressive Catholic school, and I'm very grateful for that experience there.
In Chicago, though, so I'm sure a lot of Polish, a lot of Italians, a lot of Irish.
Oh yeah, you know, that's Chicago, man, is like just such a melting pot of different cultures. And I was so disappointed, you know, you're talking about Doomies. Yeah. When I moved out to LA, and you know, I'm expecting, like, I'm going to have, like, get the Polish sausage and a gyros and all those other foods that I was used to having in Chicago. I was like, L.A. is just as diverse as Chicago. So, I'm like, sushi? I'm like, at a mile, like, what the? Nah, man, I can't do this.
Take some getting used to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, you say, I mean, I'm not in good shape. It's just that the food options here aren't as great. As you know, even if you look at the pizza, it's like Chicago's all about that deep dish.
Oh yeah,
pizza. Like you're not keeping a six pack with the deep dish. But
oh, I know. Yeah,
everything is thin, and so yeah, just not as appetizing.
Not a lot of six pack. You ever in Chicago, Hannah?
Yeah, my brother lives there, and I have some uncles over there too.
I like it. I went there. I actually. Yeah. I've been there twice. One was a layover, so that doesn't really count. The one time I was really there, I performed at a goth festival, which was great. And listening to Midwest dominatrixes with that accent was great. When the Spank Dead East, it was fantastic. But and then you were saying the restaurants, they had a restaurant in Burbank, Taste of Chicago. John Montaigne owned it, and it had authentic Chicago stuff. It just closed. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't even know what authentic means anymore. It's like everywhere. It's like if I've never been to your country, I don't know the difference. You know, it's a good. That's all I care. I don't care about authentic. I just care, like, does it taste good? Are there herbs? Are there spices?
Right.
You know, have you been to Thailand? Thailand, to me, has some of the best food ever, because they use all the herbs and spices.
Right. We had a guest that lives in Thailand now a few weeks ago, yeah. So we definitely want to jump.
Yeah, when they catch that fish, they catch it right there. Like, you order it, and then somebody jumps in the ocean and grabs it and brings it. It's incredible.
Doesn't get fresher than that. But I speaking of your mother, and I was listening to a couple shows that you were on. And the funniest thing about your mother had an interesting home remedy. She used ginger ale anytime you got sick.
Yeah. You know, I was like, what are you? Because, you know, my mom's from Belize, so she has a lot of home remedies. It was, you know, Central American immigrant parents, they're when you get sick, they don't go to a medicine cabinet. they go out to like they go out to the backyard, they go out to the bush, they go to the garden, and they come back with leaves and barks, and it was always like something floating around in some liquid in a jar in the kitchen that you hope that you never got the thing that would require you to drink that. Whatever that was, bark was floating. I still have images of it, and it to this day it terrifies me.
You gotta swallow the bark. That's the good stuff.
I think is why I never got sick as a kid. Like I actually had like I had a stomach ulcer, but outside of that, I never caught the flu or a cold. Ulcer of all things.
Got the ulcer?
I think I was like in third grade. I remember the doctor being like, I never seen anybody this young with a stomach ulcer. It tells you just how much my brain is going at all times, that I worked myself up into a frenzy and had a stomach ulcer.
You were that stressed in third grade.
Yeah. So I guess it's good she got me out of that public school. Clearly, I was struggling. But yeah, my mom, you know, it was like some type of bark or tree, or it was ginger ale, which to me is like mind blowing that they're so complete opposite. And then you get older and you realize there's not even ginger in ginger ale. So I was just drinking liquid sugar. You know, basically, which is why we all have diabetes now. So
sure.
Thank you.
Well, it's funny because it's like straight out of Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh, is it? I haven't
seen it.
It's like all cultures have like the weird thing, like Windex, ginger ale. My cousins, they were here. My cousin got sick and they're like, go get some Coke. The syrup, not the
Coke syrup.
Coke syrup, and I'll settle his stomach. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what? I'm like, okay, whatever you want.
Well, that's what the school nurse used to give us when we were kids.
Yeah, well,
Coke syrup.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Where do you get the syrup from?
You can get it at drugstores, I guess.
Still?
I got it somewhere. I don't know where I got it, but I think I asked somebody, and they pointed me out to it. But it's just like little thing of syrup without the fizz, and apparently it settles your stomach, which I like you say, it sounds like the worst thing. Like I could see like maybe the bubbles would maybe settle your stomach like Alka-Seltzer, but not the syrup. I don't know.
That's definitely, I mean, yeah, your stomach would be better, but now you got tooth decay, and
yeah,
it sounds like Mountain Dew mouth in West Virginia. Have you heard about that?
No, what's up?
No.
Mountain Dew, it's a real thing. So YouTube Mountain Dew mouth in West Virginia. So basically,
it's like meth mouth.
Yeah. I hope Mountain Dew is not one of your sponsors that you're going to tag.
No.
No.
So basically, Mountain Dew was like, you know, Coca-Cola is like everywhere. Pepsi, they're like, where do we get in? So they flooded West Virginia with a bunch of Mountain Dew. All the stores and everywhere. And then they sent in people in lab coats to look like doctors to convince mothers to give their babies Mountain Dew instead of breast milk
breastfeeding. Oh, no.
And it's the reason why West Virginia has the highest rate of tooth decay and missing teeth in babies and children. So now they have all these kids with just rotten teeth.
Right.
Because Mountain Dew just they targeted this one area, and you know the people in that area they don't know. They see somebody in a lab coat, they look like a doctor, and they're saying Mountain Dew. So moms were putting Mountain Dew in the baby's bottles and giving it to the kids, and it's still something that you know on some level is practiced. I mean, it's sad. It's sad.
That sounds like a weird like Joseph Mengele experiment or something, or Yerman or something. That just sounds like just weird weird sabotage or something. I don't know.
I mean, it definitely is. It's like, you know, but when I hear stories like that, it allows me to have more compassion for people and what they're going through, because a lot of times, like, you know, you look at someone and you want to judge them based off how they look, but you have no idea of the backstory and, you know, what they were fed, the environment they grew up in, and, you know, the lessons that they were taught or not taught growing up. So, you know, you just have to you have to be diligent in how you're taking care of yourself and what your resource or your source of information is coming in from.
Well, especially these days. I mean, back in, you know, back when we were young, we had, you know, you had to go to the library, you had to go to a newspaper, you had to go, and now it's, there's all sorts of misinformation floating around on the net. So,
yeah, and back in the day, you just had, it was either your parents or the encyclopedia. Right. That was it, right? You had, and if one was wrong, you figured out what the other were. But now it's, right. You don't know where to go and who to ask, unfortunately. So you just, sometimes you're taking a shot in the dark, you know?
Right. Now, you grew up in Chicago. Now, where did you go to college? Because you were a football player at a Division I school, but I couldn't find out the school.
Ball State University.
Okay.
Yeah.
David Letterman's alma mater.
Yeah, David Letterman. He has a scholarship set up there for students who have a C average. So if you have an A or B, you can't get the money. It's off the table. But if you have a C, that, because that's what he graduated with. And he felt like very strongly, as some studies actually show, that, you know, it's the people with C averages that end up running the world, and the people with A averages end up working for people with a C average. So he had scholarships set up for those C students out there.
Well, George W. Bush had a C average.
Yeah, see that?
He became president. I think it was C minus too.
Yeah. Oh man, he just barely made it, huh?
I think so. But so you were a football player at Ball State. And let me tell you something. A lot of people, they watch football games, they watch sports, and they're like, "This guy sucks. He's awful." To get to that level, to even get to a Division I level, Ball State, and be on the football team, you had to be a pretty good player.
Well, you had to be good, and you know, yeah, I remember in high school, there were some guys who, you know, there was a little haterade going on because of my stats and everything. And, you know, I was like defensive MVP numerous times, blah, 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 in high school. And I would tell the guys, I'm like, listen, I'm showing up before school to the gym. I'm staying after school in the gym. I'm coming in on the weekends to the gym, right? When I'm here, I'm the only one in the gym. So, yeah, are there genetics at play? Yes, of course. I didn't ask to be 6'2", and you know 240. I got up to 275 in college.
Sure.
So I didn't ask to be the size I am or the genetics that I have. So there's a bit of genetics, there's a bit of luck at play, obviously, but the third part is the work and the effort. I'm showing up early, I'm staying late, I'm watching game film. So, you know, the idea that when you look at these elite players and you go, well, you look at them and you go, of course he made it, he's big. And we just relegate people to their success, to their physical size, but they don't understand the amount of effort and work that a guy like Michael Phelps had to put into winning the Olympics. He's physically set up to win all the medals, but is he mentally and emotionally set up to win those medals? Is he putting in the effort? Can he manage his emotions? Can he deal with boredom? Can he handle the loneliness? Can he, you know, there's so many different factors that play into a person getting from A to B. So when I'm coaching my clients, I'm always talking to them about, you know, the physical aspect of their goals, the emotional, the social, the spiritual, the mental, all these things they factor in to how you move from A to B and how quickly you can move from A to B and if you can get from A to B. Mm-hmm. So it takes a 360 perspective to really achieve the things you want to do.
Well, same thing with comedy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Did you start comedy right out of college or in college?
I started right out of college. As soon as I graduated, I got my master's in counseling psychology. And then as soon as I graduated, I moved to LA and immediately started stand up. And I took that same mindset, show up early, stay late, mm-hmm. You know, work well with others. You have to have a team. I strongly, you know, this whole idea of like, I can do it myself and I'm self-made. Like, nobody in the history of anything has done anything by themselves. The people who were by themselves were the ones who were ostracized or kicked out or didn't know how to collaborate with others, which goes back to the David Letterman's scholarship mm-hmm. of why C students tend to run the world and A students end up working for them. Because to be a C student, you're in the middle, but that means you're working and you're playing and you're interacting and you're socializing, right? You're right. Not just so focused on this one thing that you let everything else fall to the side. And so those students that have straight A's all the way through usually are so hyper-focused that their social skills atrophy and they don't know how to collaborate or motivate other people to be recruited into their ideas and their vision.
Yeah, I think motivation, as you say, that's a key one, because people just have no social skills. It's hard to, if you need somebody's help, ask for it and accept it.
And that's a hard thing to do. To you know, everybody wants to look strong and impermeable and not show any weaknesses or vulnerability. But it's only when you ask for help. I mean, especially now with this COVID and this quarantine, everybody's got their hand out, you know, whether you look waiting for unemployment checks or a stimulus check or mm-hmm. Even companies and corporations who, you know, were too big to fail, they're looking at the government for financial assistance, for help. Now you see countries.
And they're getting it.
Yeah, and they're getting it. And even countries. You know, every country, it's an interrelated system where countries are relying on each other for assistance and bailouts and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all interdependent. So it behooves you to know how to work well with others.
And, especially, you know, how to work, I guess, digitally with others is what people are learning too.
Absolutely. Yeah. This whole Zoom thing it's a different beast.
Yeah, I have a theory that Zoom caused the COVID virus, because I never heard of Zoom before the virus hit. Now I can't live without it. This is how I do my podcast.
Yeah,
and something's weird.
Yeah, it you know, there's definitely a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and that's the beauty of life, in that if you're able to be flexible and adaptive, you can find ways to thrive and grow, or at least stabilize the ship so it doesn't all fall apart. But it's also a great reminder that change is inevitable and it's always happening. And there are things that happen that are outside of our control that we just can't predict or be prepared for. And that goes back to having a good team and a good tribe, so that you have other people you can hopefully rely on and help you through those tough times.
Right. Now, why did you go to LA? Why didn't you go to Chicago to do comedy?
You know, that's a great question. I was just like, I'm nomadic by nature. It's right. In my genes. My family loves to travel. A lot of my family has been all around the world, a bunch of countries. So I grew up every summer as a kid, my mom would take us to Belize. Because that's where she's from, and we have a few homes down there. So to me, to be in one place for too long, I get antsy. And so I moved to L.A. I was going to pick New York, but New York was too much like Chicago with the weather, and I wanted something different. And now I'm already thinking about, say it again?
More Belize-like.
What? Or L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like a lot more rain. That's the only thing I miss is the rain and thunderstorms. Those are quite soothing to me. So I actually listen to it on an app to put me to sleep at night, me and my girl.
I've heard that. By the way, you reference your girl a lot on your podcast and yeah. your interviews. Is this this? I shouldn't say this because she's right in the room with you, but is this the same girl that was 21 when you were 35, or is this a new one?
No. Right. That's from the Kevin Nealon. No.
I remember that bit too.
Yeah. So when I was about 35, my girlfriend at the time was 21. But no, it is not the same. My current girlfriend now, Michelle, we've been together. We just celebrated a 1-year anniversary in October. So thank you. Yeah.
And she's
in her 40s also. So she's like 3 years younger.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Hannah's dating an older guy. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When I was in Vegas, I dated a 28-year-old and a 65-year-old at the same time. It doesn't matter. As long as you're cool and you vibe. No, I was just curious about that. But you talk about your relationships a lot on your podcast and on interviews. Does that get you in trouble? Does she hear it? Does she pay attention to it, or does she just?
No, I don't think I'm saying anything insidious or harmful. And if I did, we would definitely have a discussion about it. But that is never my intention when I'm referencing the relationship to say anything negative about her or the relationship. But I reference our relationship because I want to let the listeners know that we all have different struggles. And I'm not just talking about things abstractly or just referencing something that I read on the internet. I'm saying, here's what we're going through. Here's how we're handling it. And so it's always talked about from a place of, here's a challenge, here's a struggle, and here's how we move through it so that other people who might be struggling with the same thing could also handle that. You know, one of the things I work with a lot of my clients on is conflict resolution. Because I grew up in a single parent home, just my mom. My dad, he lived on the south side of Chicago, but he had another family to run on the south side. So it was just me and my mom and my younger sister. And so I realized a few years ago that one of the things I missed out on really witnessing was conflict resolution, right? Like my mom was either pissed or she was cool, but I never saw how she got from being angry to being calm. And that's something that you would see if there was another adult in the house. You would see them argue, and then you would see how they handled their emotions once there was some type of discourse or argument. And so I never got a chance to see that. So I realized early on that my patterns in relationships was that I was either pissed or I was cool, and I didn't know how to manage my emotions or how to listen, because I never saw listening. I never saw understanding. I never saw compassion. And not to say my mom didn't listen to me, but to witness two people resolving an issue is so important. That's the importance of really having it doesn't have to be two parents, but two adults in the household, because we all tend to model our parents' behavior. You know, people talk about the president, but nobody's modeling the president. You're modeling your parents, right? So I work with a lot of my clients on how to resolve conflict, because everybody knows how to thrive in a relationship. Like, you know, all the good things, I love you, and we know what to do when everything is cool, but what do you do when there are challenges or disagreements or some type of discourse? How do you resolve that? And if there's been changes or transitions or even a trauma, a loss, how do you handle that without attacking each other or blaming each other or just destroying the relationship?
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at Hannah and I'm seeing her face recognizing a few things as you're talking, right?
Well, because of the environment I grew up in, I've seen a lot of that. So.
Well, you see a lot of
that. What's that?
A lot of conflict, but not a lot of resolution, unfortunately.
No, because my mother just didn't know how to say. To this day, she doesn't know how to say "I'm sorry" or listen to anybody but herself.
Correct.
So I just modeled myself to be the exact opposite of her.
The most important, some of the most important words in relationship, first are not "I love you." The most important words a man can say to a woman is "I understand you. I get you. I understand that you're hurt. I understand that you're disappointed. I understand that you're frustrated and upset." Like, to say "I understand you," that's such a powerful thing, because we all have a need to be seen, heard, and understood. Those are our three basic emotional needs: seen, heard, understood. And so for someone to say, "I get you, I see you," it's a very powerful thing. And it's what we all, it's why it, even in, I used to substitute teach, and sometimes a kid would act up just because he wanted somebody to see him, to acknowledge him, to say his name. When I go to a restaurant, the first thing I do is ask the waiter or waitress or server what their name is. And a lot of times they'll say, "Wow, nobody's really asked me that before. Thank you so much." And you just see them light up. We all want to be seen.
Right.
The most important thing that a woman can say to a man is, "I'm sorry, I screwed up. Here's why I messed up in all this." It's to like take ownership for the relationship. Right? There's you, there's the other person, and then there's the relationship. And so to think more about the relationship versus your own needs, what does the relationship need? And so anytime there's a some type of issue, both sides are contributing to it on some level. And so before we start blaming the other person, we have to acknowledge and be aware of how we're contributing to the issue.
And that's where your master's degree comes into play, because I thought the number one thing that a woman could say to a man is, "I love giving you blowjobs," but that's just me. I don't know. But, you know.
Well, you know, I mean,
have the greatest, biggest dick I've ever seen in my life, but I don't know.
You bring up a great point, Mark, because a lot of most infidelity is not because men just, you know, want to get a blowjob, or it's not because of a physical thing. It's not that they want their physical needs met. Most men are cheating or stepping out the relationship because their emotional needs aren't being met. I have a friend who is a sex worker, and I asked her, "Why do most men come to you?" And I thought she was going to say, you know, something of a sexual nature. And she said, "Immediately for understanding." Mm-hmm. She said, men are just coming to her because they don't want to feel judged. They don't want to feel put upon. They want to be able to share their ideas, their dreams, their emotions without feeling like they're going to be attacked for it or belittled for it or have it used against them in some type of way. Right. So we all are just looking for understanding. When a woman cheats, she'll often say because she wants to feel alive. She doesn't feel alive. Right. And that comes from feeling like she's not being seen. She's being taken for granted. She's not, she doesn't feel appreciated. So we're always, you know, fundamentally, when we are looking at issues in a relationship or in conflict, we're talking about it from an emotional perspective. When you look at these protests, especially like the racial protests and the Black Lives Matter movement, and you see the skinheads over here and the Black Lives Party, and they're both trying to be heard at the same time, right? And if one person just stopped and said, "I'm hurting too," that slows it down.
Right.
That opens up the conversation, because there's no way that you're wearing all black all the time and you got the face tattoo and you are destroying property and you're not hurting. You're hurting. But we don't start with the hurt. We don't start with the pain. We start with the anger. And then there are consequences that come from that, whether you get arrested or get shot or, you dissolve your relationship. So if we can get to the nuances of our emotions and get more, feel safe enough to express, "I'm hurt, I feel discouraged. I feel powerless. All these subtle emotions that we don't usually discuss. We all like to walk around like we're calm and we're happy and excited and I'm good. And those are great, but we have to expand our emotional vocabulary so that we can connect.
You should say that, because I think things are getting so increasingly divisive. Politically is one thing. I long for the day. I remember when people were apathetic about politics. They couldn't give a shit. Those were the days. Now everybody's on social media yelling at each other. And not just politics. I posted something this week on Facebook. Just a funny thing. Somebody posted an article that said, vegans have more sex than meat eaters. Who knows if it's true or not? It's funny. Hannah's a vegan. I have other vegan friends. I posted it. People were just screaming and yelling at each other back and forth. I had to take it down. I got friends here and friends there that are screaming at each other for this stupid thing I put on Facebook.
And you know, and that's because they saw it as an opportunity to be seen, right? It's like, they're not going to really talk about the thing that is really bothering them, right? They're not going to talk about the thing that's really hurting. So this is a safe way of, I can attack this vegan thing and get some of my anger and emotions out, and then, but not really have to deal with what that's really up under my skin and keeping me up at night and has me on this treadmill and in this fight or flight type of state, right? It's a safe, it's like when somebody cuts you off in traffic and then the guy just like, you know, maybe the guy just goes berserk. It's like, all right, if I cut you off and you're going berserk, you're at 1,000 already and you're flipping me off, you were dealing with a million other things before that, right? Like that wasn't you, but you feel safe enough because you're in your car, I'm in my car, to express yourself, because we're not, you would never, you rarely will you see that happen face to face, but you feel safe enough to, you're like, ah, and now you don't really have to deal with the thing that was really bothering you.
But it's like, and Hannah's been a victim of this. I don't understand why people get hostile towards vegans. Who cares? If they don't want to eat meat, they don't have to. Right, Hannah?
Right. The thing was that we got angry because they were mocking us and making fun of us because we care about something so serious. It's not a diet to us. It's like the animal's rights. And that's not something to laugh about.
No, I understand. I understand.
And they were making a mockery of it. My girlfriend and I were talking and we were pissed. And we're like, you know, how could you be so ignorant?
But I guess I think Leo's right in that it was just it's something else. There's some deep seated something or else. Because most people would be like, who cares? The same thing. It's like, you know, remember when people were just all up in arms about gay marriage? It's like, who cares?
They love each other. Do two consenting adults?
Yeah.
Who cares? It's not your business. They love each other. They have the same rights as you.
You know what? That's what I love about traveling, Mark and Hannah, is that when you travel, you realize that what we're being fed in the news is a microcosm, a very small percentage of how most of the world feels, right? I've been to Pakistan and people were so worried about me traveling to Pakistan and how they'd respond to an American over there. And I had so much love over there. You know, I've been to 5 continents and I get love throughout the world and nobody is, I never felt threatened. I mean, do you feel unsafe in some areas? Yeah, definitely I felt unsafe in Pakistan because there's a war going on and different things like that. But you find that when you walk the streets and you go to a gathering or whatever, there's more love and there's more acceptance than what we're being shown, right? The algorithms on social media are designed to show you things that are going to anger you, upset you, to activate you, to bother you. And instead of keeping you in this place of calm and stillness, because if you're calm and you're still, now you don't need the drugs, you don't need the pills, you don't need all the things that they're trying to sell you. So it's all set up to get you into that fight, flight, or freeze, so that now you have to reach for this this drug I'm going to sell you, or now you got to go buy a thing to calm yourself down, et cetera, et cetera. It keeps you in that consumeristic type of mode.
Well, I hope this changes. And, you know, since the election, there's a lot less political posting, so it's better. But then again, if people are going to fly off the handle because they post some silly vegan thing, I don't know what to do. But what was the weirdest place that you've done comedy, Leo? Have you done comedy in foreign countries?
I don't know. I don't think I've done comedy in any weird place, but because Pakistan was such a cool, like, I would love to go back. And unfortunately, you know, this COVID thing happened. The food was amazing. The people were great. The audiences, the shows. I had an amazing time. I met some really cool thinkers and billionaires and people who had a vision for Pakistan and were actually, you know, they were building things there. And I was so excited when I came back.
You were doing it in English, the comedy?
Say it again.
You were doing comedy in English, I'm assuming?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the internet, the great thing about the internet is that it's made the world a much smaller place. And so I didn't have to change anything. They get the references, unless like you're in a country where, like a more communist country where they're banning websites and the locals don't have access to some of the things. But, you know, they're watching the same shows that I'm watching. And a lot of them travel. A lot of the audience members have been to America and then moved back to Pakistan. So, you know, it wasn't this like a third worldy experience. You know, the food was fresh. It was amazing. And I had a great time. So I've done shows in Turkey and Japan, England. So yeah, I've been very fortunate in where stand-up is taking me.
Some of the gigs we did back in the day were kind of third world countries. But so when did you start really getting into some mentoring and life coaching?
You know, to be honest, I've always been in this space. You know, going back to my childhood, because you know, my mom was a single parent, and I have a sister who's 4 years younger. I was kind of the adult in the house. You know, I'm first born, and a lot of times I would have to mitigate or mediate arguments between my mom and my sister. I would sit at the head of the table and sit my mom down and my sister down and help them hash out whatever issues they had, because my sister is very spirited and very fiery, and as is my mom. Mm-hmm. And so I was the voice of reason in the house. And often, you know, I had friends who would come to me for advice on life just growing up. So it was just a part of my personality, one, and then part of my experience growing up. And because I've traveled so much, you know, one of the upsides of feeling like an outsider for the most part in my childhood is that I got to navigate different neighborhoods and different cultures, rich, poor, middle class. I grew up between Loyola University and Northwestern University. So for me, everybody had a backpack growing up, and education was just something that was a way of life.
And a hacky sack too.
Hacky sack. Oh, I played hacky sack a couple times. I don't really have the hip mobility for that right now. I'm working on it. doing that pigeon pose every night before bed. But so, you know, the benefit of growing up in different cultures is that I understand different perspectives, and I have a bit more compassion for where both sides are coming from and why they feel the way they do. And so it's, you know, it's just been a passion of mine to connect people, build bridges, and help people understand themselves and understand the world better, but especially to thrive in a relationship and sure, in their friendships.
Yeah. Cause I was, we had a little Zoom thing, but I was gonna ask you. I'm glad Hannah's back, because what is it about mothers and daughters? Because I relate completely to that. Mm-hmm. Mothers and daughters, there's always this weird energy. Even if they get along on the surface, there's always something there. Fathers and sons don't always have that, but mothers and daughters always do. What do you think it is? Whatever you.
You know, I don't know what that is. I'm just gonna assume that in my mom and my sister's case, that because they're both spirited, and you know, when you have two spirited people in a house or in a relationship. You know, fire and fire, they're going to meet and it's going right. to combust. And if they haven't developed a language for it, then for their emotions or how they're really feeling or how to express it or how to manage it on self-soothing is something that a lot of people don't grow up with learning how to do, how to soothe themselves. Then it's going to blow up in their relationships. And I think that for mothers and daughters, the mom expects so much from the daughter, and the daughter expects so much from the mom that it gets explosive. You know, where there's kind of like that, what was it, Oedipal or whatever, where like the daughter, you know, is more like attracted to the dad or to the male figure. Like so, there's like right. this, you know, she becomes like a little girl, but with her mom. There's not that level, so I think it becomes a bit more combative.
Little subliminal jealousy, I suppose.
Yeah.
But also, I was going to ask, I forgot to ask this right at the top. How are you shitting these days?
How am I what?
How are you shitting these days?
You said shaving?
Shitting.
Oh, shitting.
Yeah. You did say that.
I'll say it again. How are you shitting? Pooping? BMing, whatever you want to call it.
Well, you know, I drink a gallon of water a day, and I get a lot of chia seeds in my overnight oats. So we are in and out, you know, zero dark 30 SWAT team operation.
Nice.
We barely have to wipe.
The reason I asked Hannah. Is because most people go up to somebody that they haven't seen in a long time and say, "How you doing?" And Leo has a lot of alternative things about that.
Plug my laptop in.
Okay. Because what are you going to say? How are you doing? You're going to get it fine, whatever. You're going to get it right.
Right.
Leo says that you should ask, "How are you shitting? How are you sleeping?" Right?
Yes.
Better questions to ask. Are you shitting?
You know, my grandpa would agree with that one. I think he'd like me to ask him how his bathroom stuff is every morning.
That's a nice way to put it, bathroom stuff.
Yeah. I didn't think we'd get into
grandpa. I mean, it's bathroom. True though. How are you sleeping? What if someone in your everyday life just, you know, they don't ask you that? That's actually kind of nice. It's like, oh, hey.
Yeah, because.
Not the same. How are you doing? Good.
Yeah, it's the same response. Good, fine.
Yeah, I like that.
Cool. But, you know, if you tell me that you didn't sleep well, now I'm really going to find out what's mm-hmm. going on. Did you get in an argument with your girl? Are you stressed at work? Do you have sleep apnea? Is your vitamin D levels low? Are your vitamin D levels low? All these different questions. Did you exercise before you went to bed? There's just so many factors, too much caffeine in your system because it stays in there. It can stay in there mm-hmm. for a few days.
Energy drinks, zero calories. Sorry. No, you're right. You shouldn't have too much caffeine.
So, yeah, you know, there's just so many different factors. You have an allergy. Is your mattress, you know, horrible? You get to the real stuff a lot quicker than the weather and sports.
It's true.
Something more personal.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely, it doesn't get more personal than how are you shitting. And I'm glad to know that Leo's shitting very well.
What about you, Mark? How are you shitting?
Not bad. The last couple of days have been fine. Yeah,
that's good.
I don't think there's nothing, no constipation, no diarrhea. Everything's, you know, in and out, like you said.
That means you're healthy.
I don't know about that, but I do have where's the time go? Isn't Leo great, Hannah?
He is very great, yes.
Yeah, and we got to have him back because we just barely scratched the surface with Leo. But I've got two questions now, unless Hannah's got another question.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
we're talking about all this great food in other countries and Chicago. What food do you actually like from Southern California?
To be honest, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I'm a huge fan of that I feel like really? I can't get anywhere else. Yeah, I mean, does California have good restaurants? Yeah. But in terms of a food, nah, when I think food, I think Chicago, I think Polish, I think gyros. When mm-hmm. I think fish, I think Thailand. When I think pizza, I think Chicago or Italy. I actually found a deep dish place in Italy.
Wow.
When I think of like beans and rice and like the heartier foods, I think mm-hmm. Belize. There's nothing that
wows you.
Yeah, but there's nothing in LA that that stands out for me. But there are restaurants where I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. Like Jelena's on mm-hmm. Abbot Kinney. It's a great restaurant. So I could name you great restaurants, mm-hmm. but I couldn't name you a great the thing dish. That they do well.
Okay.
Not off the top of my head.
Okay, what about something besides foods, like surfing or just SoCal life?
You know, what I love about LA, Los Angeles, SoCal life is one, you know, you get your vitamin D. Black people, we have a hard time absorbing vitamin D. But two, I also love that there's so many different cultures or tribes. So in Chicago, the neighborhoods are set up by your, you know, are you Polish? Are you German? Are you Irish? Mm-hmm. So you got the Irish, you got the Jews, you got the Black people. So it's all divided against that line. Whereas like in SoCal, it's divided by lifestyle. What are you into? Oh, we got the hipsters in Silver Lake. We got the surfers in Venice or skateboarders, and you know, so it's like, what do you went to? And you can, there's a neighborhood for you. So there's something very cool about knowing that whatever your vibe is, you can find it here mm-hmm. in SoCal. And there's a scene for that, you know?
I like that. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, now this is going to be a long 40 weekend. A lot of people are going to be alone. A lot of people are going to be isolated.
Yeah.
What would be your suggestion so that they can make the most of their time, or at least be happy?
Man, you know, such a great question, powerful question. And the first thing that comes to mind is, because even I'm 44, I'm in a relationship. I have great friends. I have a big family. But no matter what all the external things are that you have, you can still feel lonely. You can still feel disconnected. External things don't protect you. It's an emotion and it comes and it goes. One of the things that I do is I get out in nature. You cannot be in nature. You cannot be hiking a trail and be out in nature and feel alone. Because you hear things and you have no idea what it is. Is it a wolf? Is it a mountain lion? Is it an owl? Is it a bird? So you feel very much connected when you're out there in nature and your senses are heightened. So you get to a point where you may start off thinking about yourself and what you're going through, but as you continue along that trail, all that slowly dissolves and it fades away and you start to become in awe of the mountains and the trees mm-hmm. and the rivers, and you start to breathe in the air and you finally take that deep breath that you probably haven't taken in 10 years. You go, oh my God, like I'm finally breathing. I can feel my feet on the ground. I feel grounded. I feel present. I feel here, right? Mm-hmm. So getting out in nature, and I know it's cold right now in a lot of places, so it might be hard or impossible for you to reach out to nature like that. But the other thing I do, if I'm inside, is I journal. There's journaling, and it doesn't have to be, I think I was turned off from it in the beginning because I was like, I don't want to be writing my feelings all day. Like, it just sounds dumb.
Right.
But journaling can be just taking notes of your thoughts or of your day. Like sometimes my journal is like, I woke up at 5:30. I went for a walk. I ate this for breakfast. Maybe feel a little bloated. I had lunch. I had a meeting. I had a session. I had a coaching session. I went swimming. And sometimes your journal could just be like kind of a bullet pointed itinerary, or, oh, I remember this. She said this, that made me laugh. That was very funny. Oh, here's a cool quote that I saw, you know? So it could be whatever you want it to be. It could be the same word over and over again. And then the third thing I do is I read. I love to read fictional books or biographies, especially biographies, because you get to actually read about a person's entire life. We know when you read about someone in the news, you're getting a snippet, you're getting a small part of their life and what they're going through. But to read about someone's life from the very beginning to the very end, it makes you feel less alone because you realize they had to go through a lot of the same things that you're going through, that you thought nobody would understand me, nobody else is going through this. And then you're like, holy crap, I can't believe John D. Rockefeller went through this, or Jay-Z went through this, or Michelle Obama, or Genghis Khan, right? So it's through books that, and you can do audiobooks, that can help us feel connected. And then meditation, just sitting there. I mean, when was the last time you just sat and just and did nothing and just see what comes up for you, you know? And you could even do it for a minute, even a minute with yourself, is a very powerful thing. So I call it germs: journal, exercise, read, meditate, and self-talk. And I do those five things every day. And those are the things that help me feel connected and help me feel grounded. And I'm always teaching it to my coaching clients.
Is there any specific meditation technique that you use? Because I really want to get back into it. I haven't done it on a daily basis, which I should. Yeah. Is there a mantra? Is there something that you do specifically? Is there?
I mix it up. You know, to me, it's like, because you know, I'm an athlete, and I believe that if you want to be a great athlete, you have to mix up your training styles. You know, sometimes I'm doing a lot of yoga. Sometimes I'm doing swimming. Sometimes I'm doing Pilates. Sometimes I'm swinging kettlebells. Sometimes I'm going for, so you have to confuse. So same thing with meditation. Sometimes I go through a period where I'm meditating for an hour every day. Sometimes I'm doing a minute a day. There are days where I don't meditate in a traditional form. Sometimes I do a mantra. Sometimes I do a guided meditation. It's really about tapping into yourself and saying, what do I need right now? Well, if I want to sit for a few minutes with myself, what'll help me do that? And there's nothing wrong with using a guided meditation or a mantra or just sitting for 1 minute. And here's the power, because a lot of people listening in and be like, sitting for a minute, that's not going to do anything. But when you look at the studies on emotions, most of our emotions last for only a few minutes. Only there's a few emotions like anger or sadness that last, you know, like 20 minutes to a half hour, to have a little bit longer of a duration. So 1 minute is enough to at least cut what you're feeling and going through in half. And that's a big deal. Everybody wants to feel hype and excited and awake and alert, but peace is where we all want to be.
Right. And one last question. And like I say, where does the time go? We can talk for hours. What are you thankful for?
Everything. I'm thankful for all of it, because and because it's so easy to say I'm thankful for this money that I'm making, my girlfriend, job, like all the things that we label as good. But none of it happens without the bad. That's why, you know, they have that yin yang symbol, because we need both. We need the light and the dark. I need the atrocities. I need the accidents. I need the traumas. I need the you know, the other day we were in Laredo, Mexico, about a week or two ago. We're in Laredo, Mexico. Okay. And I was almost attacked by two pit bulls. Yikes. They were loose, and it was just me. I was walking along the beach, and they popped out from this fence and started chasing me, and I had to jump in the ocean and swim to from one rocky peninsula to the other to escape these two pit bulls. And I was so angry because I'm like, where are the owners? Here I am in this beautiful, you know, we're like in this very secluded, very nice upscale park. And I was also terrified, obviously. And I couldn't sleep that night. I was up all night, like trying to replay, like, what if I couldn't escape? What if I couldn't swim? What if the water was too deep or it was too choppy, or I didn't see them in time to be able to back up? And so I got up and I started Googling, like, what to do when a dog attacks. And then I started Googling, like, how to swim in open water, because I can swim a little bit in a pool, but I don't really know how to swim in the ocean. That's an entirely different dynamic. So I'm grateful for that experience because it taught me things about dogs that I didn't know. And it taught me things about myself I didn't know. And it also taught me things about swimming. And it's changed what I do when I go swimming now, so that it's added like an extra bit of motivation so that I can swim in the ocean, which is something I stayed away from. But I realized, like, you have to be prepared for, you know, different scenarios. So I'm so grateful for it because it's made me learn and prepared me if it ever happens again in a different way.
That's a great story. I'm going to refrain from doing a dog paddle joke because we're out of time. But and as you said, the light and the dark go well. That's why we are the light side of the dark side. To quote the industrial band Skinny Puppy, life is up and down. And it is for everybody. And just, you got to make yourself have the best life. And I'm thankful that Hannah has been in my life and been my co-host and my friend for all this time. And I'm thankful that I'm reconnecting with Leo. And I have a feeling that we're going to do a part two real soon. Right, Hannah?
Definitely. Yes.
I love it.
Now Leo, tell everybody everything you got going on. Tell them about your podcast. Tell them about your life coaching and how people get in the hold of you.
All right, so for one-on-one coaching, you can go to thrivewithleo.com. If you're struggling with some type of transition, trauma, tragedy, or if you just want to learn how to communicate and listen and resolve conflicts within your relationships and friendships, go to thrivewithleo, thrivewithleo.com, and or thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. My podcast is called Before You Kill Yourself. It's a suicide prevention podcast. So know that we are talking about suicide and mental health and all the things that contribute to it. I have people in there talking about sleep and relationships and sex. And so we're covering life 360 because, you know, the pain can come from anywhere. So we want to make sure you're prepared for it.
And if you're listening to this, then wherever you're listening to us, you can get Leo's show. This week, you just dropped a show, right?
So, yeah, we release two every week at least.
Yeah. So two times a week, listen to Leo. And thanks for being Thanksgiving. Thanks, Leo, for being on the show. And Hannah's got a podcast too, Vegans Uncensored, which you can listen to on all. It's Hannah and Mary Zaint, and they talk about all things vegan. And other things.
Yeah, whatever comes to mind.
And follow Hannah at Vegans Uncensored and hail HannahBox666 on Instagram. And follow me, Goth Comedian, on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.